heute die devotees alle samples also, or Lord Krishna Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 23. Well, actually, today's verses are scheduled to begin Chapter 24. Doing Chapter 24, verses 1 to 4. But in order to do that, we need to finish Chapter 23, which somehow or other didn't get quite finished on schedule. That's how I understand it. So we're on 38, right? I think what? 46. Sorry. Okay, 46. I'm just going to read through these verses until we get to chapter 24. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a very ancient concept, from the first offer of respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the Sikh Muslim, and the Indian, unto Manasaraswati, the Goddess of Nandi, and unto Srimad Vyasadeva, the author, by regular attendance of the classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service unto the pure devotees, all of his troubles into the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, and praise the transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So reading in chapter 23 from text 46. We can chant this together? Is that right? Anyatta purna kamasya karyana yashi sampate ishita varinama ishayata vidambana. To the translation by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Otherwise, why would the Supreme Controller, whose every desire is already fulfilled, and who is the master of liberation and all other transcendental benedictions, enact this pretense with us, who are always to be controlled by him? So just as a background information for those who are just here for the first time, the chapter the Brahmins wise bless. And the chapter is just now winding up. These are the Brahmins speaking after their admitting and regretting their position of not taking advantage of and not recognizing the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and not going to him. And they're recognizing that the benediction and the blessings that their wives have. So I'm just going to read it again. Otherwise, why would the Supreme Controller, whose every desire is already fulfilled, and who is the master of liberation and all other transcendental benedictions, enact this pretense with us, who are always to be controlled by him? Purport. Although Lord Krishna is the absolute truth, he humbly sent his cowherd boyfriend to beg food from the Brahmins. In so doing, he exposed the Brahmins' foolish arrogance and establish the glories of his own transcendental beauty by attracting their very wives to surrender at his lotus feet. Text 47, together.
Hitvanyam bhagatayam shri parasparsha shayashakrit svatma dosha kavarina tadyachna vyanamohi.
Hoping for the touch of his lotus feet, the goddess of fortune perpetually worships him alone, leaving aside all others and renouncing her pride and fickleness. That he begs is certainly astonishing to everyone. Purport. The Supreme Master of the Goddess of Fortune herself obviously does not have to beg for food, as pointed here, out here by the Brahmin, for finally manifesting real spiritual intelligence. 48-49 together.
Desha kala pitara vajyam mantra kantar vijyogyama deva kaya namastrasya kakurdana shanamaya sa eva bhagavan sakshat vishnu yoge shvareshvara yato
place and time, the various items of paraphernalia, the Vedic hymns, the prescribed rituals, the priests and sacrificial fires, the demigods, the patron of the sacrifice, the sacrificial offering, and the pious results obtained are all simply manifestations of his opulences. Yet even though we have heard of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, the Lord of all mystic controllers, had taken birth in the Yadu dynasty, we were so foolish that we could not recognize Sri Krishna to be none other than him. Text 50, together.
Tasmai namo bhagavate krishnayam tuhanyase yamayam mohita viyo brahmana.
Respectful obeisances unto Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His intelligence is never bewildered, whereas we, confused by his power of illusion, are simply wandering about on the path of fugitive work. 51, there's still a couple more. Together.
Sahana Adya Purisha.
And thus, we could not understand his influence as the original personality of Godhead. Now we hope that he will kindly forgive our offense. And here's the last verse of this chapter.
Iti svaram anusmritya krishne te kritarvedana idrishara vajamata kamsa vita nachachala.
Thus reflecting on the sin they had committed by neglecting Lord Krishna, they became very eager to see him. But, being afraid of King Kamsa, they did not dare go to Braj. Report. Realizing their offense against Lord Krishna, and finally appreciating his almighty position, the Brahmins naturally wanted to rush to Braj to surrender at the lotus feet of the Lord. But they were afraid that Kamsa would certainly kill them when his spies reported that they had gone to Krishna. The Brahmins' wives were absorbed in ecstatic consciousness and thus went to Krishna anyway, just as the gopis, simply to dance with the Lord, traveled in the dead of night through the forest inhabited by wild animals. But the Brahmins were not on such an advanced platform of Krishna consciousness, and thus, overcome by fear of Kamsa, could not see the Lord face to face. Thus, in the purpose of the humble service of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 23rd chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Brahmin Wise Blessed. So we've been going through these chapters for some time now, and in the last few days there's been discussion whether who's more advanced, the ladies or the men. But the point is, and as has have been mentioned out by previous speakers, that's not really the main point in this chapter. It's not the main point. The main point is how Krishna bestows his mercy on his devotees. That's the main point. Krishna bestows his mercy on his devotees. And as we'll see in the next chapter, the very first verse is going to give a nice explanation of the Brahmin's position also, how they also get and receive the mercy of the Lord. So, because I've been reading a little bit in Nectar Devotion in the last few days, there's been some really interesting little snippets of pastimes, little interesting aspects of this pastime that I'd like to share with you, how it is that the Brahmins want, explained in the chapter called Eternal Perfection, which is 23 or 4 or 5. Chapter in Nectar Devotion, that about the position of the Brahmins' wives, how they achieve perfection. So I'm going to read that now. This is Nectar Devotion. A person achieving perfection in devotional service simply by the causeless mercy of the Lord is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam in connection with the Brahmins and their wives who are engaged in performing yajna or sacrifice. When the wives of the Brahmins were favored by Lord Krishna and immediately attained the ecstasy of love of Godhead, their husband said, "How wonderful it is that although these women have undertaken no reformatory performances, such as accepting the sacred thread, have not resided in the monastery with the spiritual master, have not observed the strict principles of celibacy, have not undergone any austerities, and have not philosophized on the observance of ritualistic ceremonies, they still have attained the favor of Krishna, which is aspired after even by great mystics. How wonderful it is that these women have attained such perfection." And that should be our attitude. How wonderful it is that these women who have attained such perfection, while we, although Brahmins who have performed all the reformatory activities, cannot attain to this advanced stage. So there was another example of a person who attained perfection by the mercy of the Lord, and that was Sukadeva Goswami in this paragraph. In the previous paragraph. So here it says, Sukadeva Goswami and the wives of the Brahmins performing yajna are vivid examples of devotees who achieve the perfectional state of devotional service by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they achieve that mercy by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but that doesn't mean that the Brahmins themselves were neglected by the Lord, because they weren't. They also achieved the mercy of the Lord. So here's another something from Nectar Devotion as far as neglecting the presence of others. As far as neglecting the presence of others is concerned, the wives of the Brahmins who were performing sacrifices in Vrindavan left home as soon as they heard that Krishna was nearby. They left their homes without caring for their learned husbands. The husbands began to discuss among themselves, "How wonderful is the attraction for Krishna that has made these women leave us without any care. This is the influence of Krishna. Anyone who becomes attracted to Krishna can be relieved from the bondage of birth and death, which can be compared to the locked-up homes that were neglected by the wives of the Brahmin." And then also it was spoken how that these wives of the Brahmins, they had heard about Krishna from the flower sellers, the fruit vendors, the different people who would travel from Mathura to Vrindavan, or from Vrindavan to Mathura if they were here. Because the Brahmin community was on the outskirts of Vrindavan. It was near, it was closer to Mathura. So my impression was, oh, you know, they would hear, "Oh, Krishna's really beautiful, oh, Krishna's beautiful." But they heard very intimate pastimes, which is explained also in the they heard the very intimate pastimes of the Lord. And there's one quotation, if I can find it. Yeah, okay. This is in the chapter, 24th chapter, explaining about the qualities of Krishna under Dhira Lalita. So here's the definition of Dhira Lalita. Dhira Lalita is a person is called Dhira Lalita if he is naturally very funny, always in full usefulness, extra from joking and free from all anxiety. Such a dear Lolita personality is generally found to be domesticated and very submissive to its lover. This dear Lolita trait in the personality of Krishna is described by the Yajnapatni, the wife of one of the Brahmins who performs sacrifices in Vrindavan. She tells her friend what she's heard, and this is what she's heard. One day, Srimati Radharani, accompanied by her associates, was taking rest in her garden. And at that time, Lord Krishna arrived in the assembly. After sitting down, he began to narrate very impudently some of the activities of the previous night's activities with Radharani. While he was speaking that way, Srimati Radharani became very embarrassed. She was feeling ashamed and was absorbed in thought, and Krishna took the opportunity to mark her body with different kinds of tila. Krishna proved himself to be very expert in that art. In this way, Krishna, as dear Lalita, was enjoying his youthful proclivities in the company of the gopis. So I just thought that was also very interesting because they heard Krishna's pastimes are quite, and Krishna's very famous, he's all famous, he's been on his pastimes are all attractive. And these gopis heard of these famous and all attractive, they heard details, they heard the details from these pulindas, the village, the jungle ladies, the aborigine women who would travel, and from other people, obviously, and they would know their pastime. So in the beginning of this 23rd chapter, and actually at the end of the 22nd chapter, Krishna starts to glorify the trees in Vrindavan, how the trees are all merciful and always giving. Whatever anybody wants, the trees are giving. So it's interesting how the acharyas have connected that sloka with this pastime of the Brahmins, because Krishna was in a very subtle way, because he can speak very subtly. He was about to say this pastime was about to be enacted, and he was comparing that these Brahmins that mentioned in this chapter, they weren't even as merciful as the trees of Vrindavan, because they didn't even give charity to these young boys when they came to ask. So the Brahmins weren't even as merciful as the trees. But there's still hope. So let's hear it. There's still hope for these Brahmins. They're not lost, because Krishna is very kind. He never gives up on his devotees. So you have to remember that point, because now I'm going to go into chapter 24. I have a lot to read again. Now I'm going to come back to that point, if you can help me remember. Chapter 24. Here's the chapter summary. Here we are on our happy chapter, worshipping Govardhan Hill. Because this is why Krishna is enacting all of these pastimes. One thing unfolds, another thing unfolds. So he's there visiting, he's in that area performing his pastimes, and yes, the cowherd boys on Krishna's behalf plead that they're hungry, and yes, he knows that the Brahmins are performing sacrifice. But he knows why they're performing sacrifice. They're about to perform a sacrifice. And other things are going on in the village at that time. So here's what's happening. Chapter 24. In this chapter, Lord Krishna crushes the pride of Indra by prohibiting a sacrifice intended for him and initiating a substitute sacrifice in worship of Govardhan Hill. When Sri Krishna saw the cowherd men busily preparing for a sacrifice to Indra, he inquired about it from their king, Nanda. Nanda explained that the rain given by Indra enables all living entities to maintain their lives, and therefore this sacrifice would be executed to satisfy him, Indra. Krishna responded, "It is because of karma alone that the living entities take their birth in certain bodies, experience varieties of happiness and suffering in that body, and then give it up as the karma pertaining to it runs out. Thus, it's karma alone that's our enemy, our friend, our guru, and our lord. And Indra can do nothing to alter the happiness and distress of anything. For everyone is tightly bound by his karmic reactions. The material modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance bring about the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this world. The clouds give forth the rain, than the cows. Furthermore, the cowherd's proper residence is in the forest and on the hills. Therefore, you should offer worship to the cows, the Brahmins, and Govardhan Hill. After Krishna spoke thus, he arranged for the cowherd men to worship Govardhan with the paraphernalia collected for the sacrifice of Indra. He then assumed a huge, unprecedented, transcendental form and devoured all the food and other offerings presented to Govardhan. As he did so, he proclaimed to the cowherd communities that although they had worshipped Indra for so long, he had never appeared in person, was Govardhan himself, and now manifested before their eyes and eaten their offerings of pusa. Therefore, they should all now offer obeisances to Govardhan Hill. Then Lord Krishna joined the cowherds in offering obeisances to his own newly assumed form. So that's the summary of the events about to be explained in this chapter. This is our scheduled verses for today, verses 1 to 4. So we have more verses. So let's do it together, because otherwise it's only 9 o'clock.
Shri Sukaru Vacha, Bhagavana Vikatraya, Baladevena Samhita, Akashyam Vidasam Bhopam, Indraya Vyakritodhyama.
Shri Sukaru Vacha, Shri Sukadeva Goswami said, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Api, also, Tatcha Eva, in that same place, Baladevena, by Lord Balaram, Samhita, joined, Akasya, saw, Nivasam, staying, Gopan, the cowherd man, Indra, for Indra, the king of heaven, Yajna, for the sake of the sacrifice, Krita, making, Udyaman, great endeavor. So here's the little clue. Krishna stayed in that village for some time because he wanted to give his mercy to the Brahmin's wives and the Brahmin. So here's the translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, while staying in that very place with his brother, Baladeva, Lord Krishna happened to see the cowherd men busily arranging for a sacrifice to Indra. Report. According to Srila Sridhar Swami and other acharyas, the word Tatra Eva in this verse indicates that Lord Krishna stayed in the village of the Brahmins whose wives had satisfied him by their devotion. Thus he gave his mercy to those Brahmins as well as to their chaste wives, Hadibodhi, who had no one to associate with except their husbands. In that place, the cowherd men, headed by Lord Krishna's father, Nanda Maharaj, were somehow or other preparing an elaborate sacrifice to Lord Indra, and Lord Krishna reacted as follows. So Tatra Eva, he stayed in that same place because he knew what was going on, and he knew that it was that he wanted to give more mercy to the wives of the Brahmins, and he also wanted to give his mercy to the Brahmins. So they weren't left out. No one was left out. Krishna never leaves his mercy out. He doesn't give his mercy to some and hold it back from others. He's equally distributing his mercy. And it's a question of us taking the opportunity to take advantage of the mercy that the Lord has given. So the Brahmins, at the time that the cowherd boys came to beg foodstuff for him, as they, in their own words, they said, we were foolish. We weren't purified enough to see that, even though we had heard that Krishna had taken birth in the Yadu dynasty, we weren't advanced enough at that time to see that this very person whom these cowherd boys were begging in behalf of was that same Supreme Personality of Godhead whom we have been worshipping. So they have been worshipping the Lord. They were Vaidik Brahmins. Following the rules and regulations of the scriptures and following to the point of neglecting the import. But still, they didn't stay on that platform. Because why? Because when Krishna gave his mercy to the wives, they got a little bit of mercy from the Lord, and then they, by receiving that mercy, became vehicles of giving out mercy also. So there's a verse in Bhagavatam, spoken by Lord Brahma. Yeah, 14th chapter, Lord Brahma. Atapi te deva padam buja vaya prasada lesha. Prasada lesha anugrahi eva hi. Janati tatvam bhagavan mahino machanga e kopi chiranyatina. That no one can understand the mercy, the Lord's position, unless they become favored by a slight trait, prasada lesha, with a slight trait of the mercy of the Lord. So, but those, and someone who just speculates to understand the Lord, they'll be unable to understand Him, even though they might speculate for millions and millions of years. But it's that prasada lesha, that mercy that was given to the wise and therefore passed along to the Brahmins also, that they got the mercy of the Lord. Now, one of the end verses of chapter 23 mentioned that once they became awakened to Krishna's position, they immediately wanted to rush to grudge, but they held themselves back a little bit because they still had fear. They were still fearful of Kamsa. Whereas the wise and the gopis, it was explained, they had given up everything. They also had love, spontaneous love for Krishna, ecstatic love, high levels of love for Krishna, and they gave up everything, all their upadis, designations, that we're wives, we have husbands, we're this, it's not proper, it's this, it's that, I'm not supposed to go out, and my husband's opposed to it, my sons are opposed to it, my father, everybody's opposed to it. All of that, so we can imagine, sometimes you can say that quickly, they gave up everything and ran to Krishna, but then when you think through what it would be for you and I, or, you know, not that we're imagining we're on that level, but just to try to understand how they gave up all those designations. They gave up the very deep-rooted misunderstanding of who we are. When they understood fully, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, I'm golden. I have a relationship. I have a right. I have a relationship with Him. They gave it up. The Brahmins at that particular point, although they didn't understand Krishna's the Supreme Lord, they weren't quite there. Not to be criticized for that, because that'll come also. Gradually, because why? Because the process of bhakti is guaranteed that one will reach the ultimate result. But just by starting out on the process of bhakti, even one might be the most neophyte, or even below neophyte, still, by starting out in the process of bhakti, Srila Prabhupada says in Nectar Instruction that one is guaranteed success just by the potency of bhakti. One is ultimately dragged, Prabhupada says, ultimately dragged to success by the potency of bhakti alone. So, Brahmins at that particular time, that wasn't all, they weren't all the way there. Just like when we are going to read about the gopis, when they go off in the dead of night and they hear the flute and they go off. Krishna, some of the gopis are held back. And so one might wonder, why some of the gopis are held back and they couldn't get out of their houses. The acharyas explained, and Vishwanatha Thakur explained, that some of them were held back by Krishna's will in the sense that they needed more fire of purification. So they had to go through the ordeal of fire, of anxiety, of intense longing. They had to, what do you call it, up the ante a little bit. They increased their hankering even more to go to Krishna. So there's an example of Vishwanatha Thakur gives. He says, even like gold is already considered pure, but sometimes if you put your gold, you can still purify gold even more by putting it in the fire. So the residents of Vrindavan, they're golden devotees, pure, intensely pure devotees of the Lord, but still Krishna even puts them in the fire to increase their purity even more. And any slight tinge of material contamination is burned off by that fire of intense longing. Prabhupada says, I'm forgetting, maybe it's Nectar Devotion, as it says that Oh yeah, it is. Connected emotion under lala samayi, under intense longing. That intense longing that for perfection is the price that we have to pay. So we have to try to intensify our longing for perfection. Because otherwise we kind of like sit down. So anyway, here's what's going on. So a couple more verses. Tatcha abhiyopi bhagavan sarvatna sarvadarshana rashraya vanato krishna rinilanandurpurana. Being the omniscient supersoul, the Supreme Lord Krishna already understood the situation, yet he still humbly inquired from the elders, headed by his father, Nanda Maharaj. Before, Lord Krishna was eager to enact his pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill and defeating the false pride of Indra, and thus he cleverly inquired from his father about the imminent sacrifice. Text 3. Katyatam nipitakoyam samramo vyapadata kinipalam kasya bodhesha kinavasa. Translation, Lord Krishna said, my dear father, kindly explain to me what this great endeavor of yours is all about. What is it meant to accomplish? If it is a ritual sacrifice, then for whose satisfaction is it intended? And by what means is it going to be executed? In text 4, this is our last verse for today. Etadruhi mahantamo mayam shushu shave pita nani gopyam nisannam prityam saratmanam piha asya parvishinam amitro yasa vidhisham. Translation, please tell me about it, O Father. I have a great desire to know, and I am ready to hear in good faith. In other words, I'm not going to give you any arguments. Certainly, no secrets are to be kept by saintly personalities who see all others as equal to themselves and who have no conception of mine or another and who do not consider who is a friend, who is an enemy, and who is neutral. Report. Lord Krishna's father might have thought that his son was a mere child and thus could not properly question the validity of our baby sacrifice. But Lord Krishna, the Lord's clever statements here would certainly have convinced Nanda that Krishna, Sri Krishna, was making a serious, not whimsical inquiry, and that a serious answer should thus be given. So here we start now the pastime of Krishna. He's getting ready to lift Govardhan Hill. He wants to enact that pastime. So what happens, this is the background scene. While he happens to be in this village where the Brahmins and the Brahmins' wives were, he sees that there's a lot of commotion going on and that people are endeavoring for this yajna to Indra. Now, it's not stated here that this yajna is performed every year, because that's a little curious. Anyway, it's not stated there. But anyway, in further verses, it's going to be said that one of Nandamara's responses is that, well, we do this all the time. It's a custom. It's a custom. But if you think about it, it appears that our Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, sometimes it appears that he might be giving contradictory instructions. Because didn't he just say in the Bhagavad Gita? He said in the Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter of the Gita, 3:10, that you should do your sacrifices. And sacrifices to the demigods are good. Of course, here I'll read it. Put it in context. He said, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices to Vishnu and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this yajna, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you, and thus by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. In truth, charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods being satisfied with the performance of Yajna will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering to the demigods is certainly a thief. So, in the beginning, in this third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is recommending sacrifices to the demigods. And we see throughout his lila, there are different yajnas and sacrifices, like we just finished a chapter, a couple of previous chapters, when the gopis, the unmarried kumaris, they were offering their yajna to please whom? Whom was that for? Katyayani. Katyayani, who's an expansion of the goddess Durga. So they're doing Katyayani right, but what was their intention? Their intention of that sacrifice was that Krishna would become their husband. So sometimes we also see in other pastimes, the cowherd men and Nanda Maharaj, they go sometimes to the Ambikavan forest to worship Lord Shiva and his wife. So sometimes they're offering sacrifices. Or it appears that they're offering sacrifices, but they're all, but what Krishna is trying to establish here has to be done in proper perspective. Because Krishna explains further on in Bhagavad Gita, that one who worships the demigods as if they're the ones that are in charge of giving the benediction, they're the one, if they're thinking they're the sole supplier of the benediction, that is avidhi purvakam. That's misplaced intelligence. That's not the proper thing. And so that's what Krishna wants to establish here. So sometimes, although it might appear that, oh, sometimes he says this, and then he acts in a different way, we have to see things through the eyes of the scriptures with the help of the acharyas to put everything in proper perspective. Because even in nectar devotion, what's one of the angas? One of the 64 angas of bhakti is do not disrespect the demigods. We're not supposed to. The demigods are in a higher position than us. We shouldn't disrespect them. But at the same time, we should have proper perspective of what their position is. Also in Nectar of Devotion, it's explained that the demigods are on the level of, they have a relationship of dasya. They're called akrita devata. Is that the right word? Give it something like that. Not 100%. Akrita Devata, they have a relationship of in the servitude mood. That means that they have a level of prema, but they haven't, you know, so sometimes one might inquire, well, why does it seem that the demigods, like here, Indra acts a little foolishly. Previously we saw Lord Brahma acting in a way that, although he's in such an exalted position, he was bewildered by the potency of the Lord. So there's a couple of things to consider there. So that's happening. We have to understand that these demigods, they're acting under the personal lila, under the influence of the lila of the Lord. They have a certain role, they have a certain relationship with the Lord, and they have a certain activity that are instructions, because the Lord's activities are all for our instruction, that the Lord wants to execute, he wants to instruct others by their pastimes, so they're part of the plan, part of the play in acting. So if we see them acting in a way that appears a little bit illusion, we have to understand this isn't a normal mayic potency. This is a special potency by the Lord. And also that the Lord has, like I said, he has instructions, lessons that he wants to impart to the luminaries. And one lesson here, that he wants to instruct that there's no one supreme, more supreme than I. The demigods, they have their potency, but they're getting their potency, according to my plan, they're getting their potency from me, and therefore they're giving their benedictions to one another, or one and all, and like Indra's service of supplying the rains. Yes, that's his service, he's meant to supply the rains, but where does he get that potency? He gets it from the Lord himself. So that's one of the lessons that are there. So again, trying, through the help of Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, to put it all in proper perspective, how these activities, which might appear contradictory at first, Krishna's activities might appear contradictory, but there's nothing, or how can you say? Ultimately, there's nothing contradictory in Krishna's activities, although it might appear that way, because, like I was just thinking of the Sri Upanishad verse, that Krishna walks, but he doesn't walk. That's a little bit of a contradiction. He's far away, but he's very near. Well, there's another. There's so many apparent contradictions, but they all take their shelter in Krishna's potency. It just so happened that we were just reading about this yesterday in the Nectar Devotion. Let's see if I can find it in my notes. Again, it's under in the qualities of Sri Krishna. One of the qualities is Dhira Prashanta. A person who is very peaceful, forbearing, considerate, and obliging is called Dhira Prashanta. But a person who's Dhira Lalita, Krishna also has that quality. Dhira Lalita is funny, full of youthfulness, expert in joking, and free from all anxiety. And a person who's a Dhiradatta, Krishna's Dhiradatta, he's very grave, gentle, forgiving, merciful, determined, humble, highly qualified, chivalrous, and physically attractive. So, those are a lot of different, very contradictory qualities, but they all can take shelter in Krishna because why? He's the source. He's the source of them all. So, here's one funny little quote. Nectar Devotion sometimes gives you these little snippets, and some of them are quite amusing. This is about Kaliyagama, and then we'll go back to books. So a person, such qualities were visible in the character of Krishna, because when he was, did you know that Krishna wrote a letter to Kaliyagama? Remember Kaliyagama? He was the untouchable king, right? And Jarasandha and Kaliyagama were attacking Mathura. At one point, it was practically at the same time, so Krishna was a little concerned about the safety of the residents in Mathura. So anyway, at one point, in the midst of all that, Krishna wrote a letter to Kaliyagama, and it said, because when he was writing the letter to Kaliyagama, Krishna addressed him as a sinful frog. In this letter, Krishna advised Kaliyagama that he should immediately go and find some dark well for his residence, because there was a black snake named Krishna who was very eager to devour all such sinful frogs. Krishna reminded Kaliyagama that he could turn all the universe to ashes simply by looking at them. So here's how, now it gives a little bit of an explanation, how can we reconcile all these apparently contradictory qualities of our Supreme Lord Krishna. The above statement of Krishna seems apparently to be of an envious nature, but according to different pastimes, places, and times, this quality is accepted as a great characteristic. Krishna's Dhiradatta qualities have been accepted as great because Krishna uses them only to protect his devotees. In other words, even undesirable traits may be used in the exchange of devotional service. And then in the Koma Purana, there's a statement about all these contradictory traits of the Supreme Lord. It is stated there that the Supreme Lord is neither very fat nor very thin. He is always transcendental to material qualities, and yet his bodily luster is black. His eyes are reddish, he is all powerful, and he is equipped with all different kinds of augments. Contradictory traits in Krishna are not at all surprising. One should not consider the characteristics of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to be actually contradictory. One should try to understand the traits of Krishna from authority and try to understand how these characteristics are employed by the supreme will of the Lord. So, Krishna has his plan. So he has his plan in arranging this worship of Govardhan Hill and then the lifting of Govardhan Hill, because he's dependent. Krishna is dependent on the love. exchanges of his devotees. And complaint that the residents of Vrindavan have that Krishna had to try to fulfill in this pastime was they wanted to see Krishna all the time. When the cowherd boys would go out to the forest with Krishna, they were so happy, but they didn't like the nighttime because then they had to go home to their own houses. And then the gopis, they didn't like the daytime because then Krishna was out in the fields and they wanted to see him in the daytime also. And then Mother Yasoda, she was always in anxiety because Krishna was out. And so Krishna arranged this sacrifice to Indra and the subsequent switching it around, changing up the sacrifice to be the worship of Govardhan Hill, and then the angering of Indra, and then the lifting of Govardhan Hill, so he could satisfy the desire of his devotees who wanted to be with him all the time, because there they were, under the hill, for 7 days and 7 nights, and they got to see his beauty from all different angles. And one of the surprising things was his ankle bells weren't tinkling. Normally they would hear the tinkling of his ankle bells all over the place, but because he was in a stationary position for so long, his ankle bells weren't tinkling. And he exchanged rasa with all the devotees at the same time underneath the hill. So there was the parental rasa with the elders, and there he was exchanging a parental ras with them. He was exchanging a conjugal ras with the gopis by glancing. He was exchanging a friendly ras with his sakhas, with his friends, by joking and laughing with them. And maybe a neutral ras, I don't know what the cow is. But anyway, he was exchanging all different levels of rasa at the same time. What, in this pastime of going on hill, which is what he's working his way for. That's one of the things. And he wanted to protect his devotees. Again, his devotees are totally dependent on him. Oh, that reminds me. Krishna, one of Krishna's qualities is dependable. Krishna's quality is dependable. And he's so dependable that even the demons depended on Krishna. They were confident that Krishna wouldn't attack them without due cause. So even though they were enemies of Krishna, they were confident of Krishna's protection. They were confident of Krishna's activity, that they wouldn't be attacked if they weren't provoking him. And the demigods, they were confident of his protection also. So even though sometimes they were threatened by the demons, they were confident of Krishna's protection. So Krishna, what is he? He's given us so many promises throughout the scriptures, that he'll protect the surrendered devotees, that they'll never be vanquished. Even someone says his name only once he'll give them all protection. So Krishna's very dependable. So we should put our hope and faith and love in Krishna, and we'll never be cheated. Of course, it is to be observed that Krishna does have a different type of time span than we do. So sometimes you might be put in a difficult situation and be praying sincerely to the Lord, and it might appear that he's not exactly answering our call at that exact moment, but not to worry. It's just not coming. So, I still have more to say. It's only 10 p.m. Time's up. Microphone's there. The pain, I can feel this pain coming on my neck. Hare Krishna. So, those are just some of the points. I surrender. And if you want to add your comments or corrections or questions, please do so. Maharaj? We just have to say one more time, Maharaj. We're sorry that you weren't given any spot today. Please forgive us for any impudence.
There's no need for any apology whatsoever. So we should be grateful, I'm sure, all of us. So many nice points. The only thing that I wanted to kind of keep a little tweaking.
Please.
There are many examples of apparent contradictions, and we understand that Prabhupada said we should study his book scrutinizing.
Mm-hmm.
So when we study scrutinizing, then we can often solve the mysteries that would seem like apparent contradictions. Sometimes there are apparent contradictions which are not apparent contradictions, they're actual contradictions, and then we have to start So you could Prabhupada say this in a morning walk conversation as opposed to what's written in the book. And you have to, sometimes you have to get into a little interpretation because it's not just apparent contradiction itself. Otherwise you go crazy trying to rationalize. But in most cases, it's only apparent. Now the one example which kind of, I think, you used it to touch off the whole discussion about resolving apparent contradictions, that Krishna was preaching that just by karma alone the demigods are obliged. And you mentioned the third chapter, text 10, etc. I think if we go on in this chapter, we find a purport where it explains that Krishna, in this case, maybe it's not necessary to, we say in American English, to get bent out of shape to try to understand this and intellectually and shastrically understand it, because Krishna was not serious. He was teasing his father. It wasn't Krishna's talking in Bhagavad Gita, he's talking in Upanishadic mood in many verses in Bhagavad Gita. He even used some language that Arjuna didn't understand in the beginning of the 8th chapter, which is Upanishadic language. But in the case of the 10th canto, in this instance, Krishna is just, you can say, testing and teasing his father's love. And all the residents of Vrindavan, even though it was not really Siddhanta, it wasn't the philosophical conclusion, but he was preaching karma mimamsa, and that's not the final Siddhanta things. So I would say that in this case we could relax a little bit and just accept that Krishna was just kidding. He wasn't really serious. In Bhagavad Gita, it's described in a purport, Krishna speaking in a much more serious mood. So I'll give you
a suggestion. Thank you. Jai. Anything else, Dharavati?
I just thought, since you were talking about the reciprocation about Krishna under the Golden Hill, but I'll mention one such reciprocation, that when he first lifted Govardhan Hill, he lifted it and did it with his right palm, his left palm. And Samadhi Yashoda was very concerned about him, so then he starts kidding with her. He said, oh Maya, you're so worried about my left hand, I can do better than that. And then he put up his pinky. And that's how he lifted Govardhan Hill for the next, the remainder of the 7 days. He was reciprocating it with his mom in that way. Yes, you know, like that's how kids do. Okay, you think this is all I can do? I can do much more.
Thanks for sharing that. There's some things in my note. There's two things. One thing that reminded me in the notes was when Krishna was first considering how to not retaliate, reciprocate with Indra, you know, for sending the deluge and everything. He was actually at first considering that he was going to retaliate with Indra. This is also from Magic Devotion. Anyway, he was first considering that he was going, how am I going to retaliate with Indra? And then he considered the matter further, and he decided that he wasn't going to deal with it in that way, and he was going to protect his devotees, and therefore he lifted the hill to protect the devotees and not deal with Indra in that retaliatory spirit. So he was. I'm sure there's many other things, but I think I'll stop here. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, all glory to Srila Bhagavatam, and all glory to Srila Bhagavatam.